What's happening, Hardscapers? This is episode 256 of the How to Hardscape podcast, where we talk about how you can start and grow your hardscaping business. And on today's episode, we have returning guest Sean Van Dyke. He is the author of Profit First for Contractors, a book I highly recommend you take a look at, you read. And we actually talked about in depth on our previous episode with Sean Van Dyke in an interview that we did, and took audience questions as well to ask him. But today we go a different route. We talk about the change in the market the past few months and what other contractors are doing to compensate for that, talking about price and value, systems, and time management strategies. But before we get into today's episode, we want to thank our sponsor, Cycle CPA. If you're looking for bookkeeping, accounting, CFO services, reach out to Cycle CPA at cyclecpa.com. Let them know How to Hardscape sent you for money off their services there. And if you're looking for a software to dive into that's going to help streamline processes in your business, from budgeting, estimating, recovering your overhead and every estimate that's going out, job costing, scheduling, time tracking, and so much more, check out the How to Hardscape headquarters at members.howtohardscape.com, or just shoot me a message at How to Hardscape on Instagram, and we'll set up a demo call for you and see if it works for your business. And without further ado, let's get into today's episode with Sean Van Dyke. Today, we're joined by Sean Van Dyke. He is the author of Profit First for Contractors and founder of the Built to Build Academy, where you can start to build systems for your business. One of the many topics we'll cover today, and we've already had Sean on the show, so this is Sean's second appearance on the How to Hardscape podcast. So Sean, thank you so much for taking the time here.
Hey, Mike, thanks for having me. It's great to be back. I can't believe it's been like 3 years.
It's been a long time here. 3 years, a little bit over, which is I wanted to get you back on the show sooner, and I didn't want to waste your time. And so I thought of a bunch of questions to send you and get it right into this here. So Sean, before we get into this, I've seen in your stories for quite some time now, over these past few years, that you've been building your own property. You've got your own project on the go here. How's that going? Fill us in on that whole project.
Well, unfortunately, we're in the middle of a lawsuit on that. That's why you saw a lot of me kind of hands-on, tools on, and things like that. So just to let everybody out there, contractors and homeowners, know, it's very, if this can happen to me, it can happen to anybody. And what I would say is, just document everything. And that's just a good practice, whether you're the homeowner or the contractor. Now, some people are going to hear that and be like, oh man, you know, Sean's telling customers to be even worse. I'm like, no, just document everything so that you don't have to go back on, he said, she said, well, I think this happened, that. No, we can just go to it. Mistakes happen and you correct them. And it helps remove some of the emotion. But anyway, the good news is we've been in the house for almost a year. In August, it'll be a year.
Wow.
So we're really excited about that. But like any project, especially when you become almost the contractor, there's a laundry list of punch list items to do. So we've still got a lot of that to do, but it's exciting. We love the house. It's been great being in the house, and we're just enjoying moving forward. We kind of lived through the nightmare, and now we're just able to enjoy the house. So it's great. It's great.
That's good to hear the bright side of that story, that you guys are moved in. Looks like a beautiful place from the stories that I've seen with you going through that entire process, but a little bit of a rough one for sure. And always great, like, document for contractors, document everything. And the same should be for the homeowner as well there, just like you said.
Yeah. This is what I say, you know, for contractors, you're the professional. It's going to fall to you. The responsibility falls on you to document everything. The homeowner, that's why they're hiring you. Part of that is to build the project. But also, when questions come up, it protects you, the contractor, to say, I understand, but here's what was done or agreed to. This is what the plans show. Here were the changes that we made and agreed to or not agreed to, or, you know, all of that stuff. So documentation is very, very important. And I think it helps it helps fill in some of the emotional gaps that are created sometimes, because I mean, construction is hard and it's long and it's expensive, and having a foundation of good communication and documentation will never hurt you. Not having communication, even if a project goes well, can always hurt you. So that's what I'm not advocating that customers become, you know, inspectors or detectives or whatever. But for the contractors out there, you're the professional. It's going to fall to you when you, if you get involved in something a little bit sticky. You're the professional. You're the one with the, you're the one that sold the project. You're the one that said you're going to perform it. It falls on you to have documentation.
Yeah. And just to kind of riff off this a little bit, I document everything. So, but that's mostly because I have a YouTube channel with everything that I build. But it's also that good documentation. It's it kind of serves both purposes, right? And I also update my clients almost on a daily basis, especially if it's a larger project, of the documentation of what we did that day. I'm sure from your side, the consumer end of things, that also looks good, that if a contractor is doing that, reaching out to you each day and just letting you know what happened, that also feels good too. I'm in a unique situation where I've actually never hired a contractor myself. I rent, so I don't actually have that firsthand experience in my own personal life.
Yeah, I when we started the project, I wasn't going into it thinking like I need to document everything. Mm-hmm. Just in my past experience of owning construction companies and working in operations for other construction companies, and you know, have some experience in real estate development. It's just what you do. So when we went into the project, I wasn't looking for things. It was just like, oh, this is what you do. And it when because we didn't know things were going to go south, obviously. Yeah. But when they did, I was like, oh, whew. Well, at least we have documentation of the process and what was done and what was not done. And we can move forward in the way that we need to move forward. And I mean, I can't say too much about it because we're still, you know, dealing right. with that. But I can say that when I was speaking to my attorneys and they were like, okay, no one, and you hear this all the time, no one ever wins in a lawsuit except the lawyers. And you know, there's that kind of stuff. And I said, I totally understand that. It's a long, hard process, but I do have documentation. And I think my lawyers were kind of like, yeah, an emotional homeowner. You know, they think they have evidence or whatever. And then when I turned everything over, they were like, oh, this is a lot more than we've ever seen. And I'm like, yeah, good. This is what I do. That's what should be done. So there was a little bit of relief there. You know, you don't ever hear much good news from an attorney, even the ones that you're paying. But it was kind of nice to hear them say, oh, this is actually a lot. And we're like, yeah, this is just what happens. This is what you should do. So.
Definitely. Well, let's turn the page on that story. Sure. And get right into things with, at least personally, in the past 6 months, coming to the close of our previous season, which in the winter here in Toronto, we don't work during the winter for hardscaping. And leading into this season, things have become a little bit slower, or perhaps just back to normal, what we knew before the actual last few years of this high demand. With all the contractors that you talk to, has there been any change in just questions that they're asking, things that they're talking about bringing up recently, as opposed to the last few years?
Yeah, a lot. I'm hearing from a lot of our clients that they seem surprised, which you get used to the high demand and go, go, go. And they're kind of surprised now that projects they thought that were going to go forward or that were on the books are pretty solid out of nowhere. They say out of nowhere, people are dropping off, they're delaying projects. And so there's been a lot of that recently of like, now we've got some bigger gaps in our schedule where we thought this project was going to go. And for what multitude of reasons, interest rates, things, you know, slowing down in different markets, the cost of labor and materials is so high. I mean, and that's what I've been telling a lot of contractors. There's almost nothing you can do about the general economy It is getting more expensive. But I think, again, customers in general, there's always a big gap between what they think something should cost and what it actually costs. Like that has always existed. But now that gap is getting even bigger because they're not aware of just how expensive materials are and labor is. So that gap is widening. And I've been telling my clients the best thing that you can do is to fill that widening gap with data, with information. So when someone says, "Oh my gosh, this project is 30% more than what we thought," or whatever, then you agree with them and say, "Yeah, I can't believe it either. Our prices for our materials, we got a letter," like all of those letters you get from your suppliers. "Hey, price increased by 10%, by 5% starting in January, starting in March, start whatever." You get those letters all the time. Show your customers that. You're like, "I can't believe it either. I didn't want to present this price to you because it's more than we've ever charged for this, but it's not me. It's the industry, it's the world, it's whatever." And then you can say, "By the way, you may not be able to afford this project. I totally understand that. But don't make the mistake. There is some guy or some company out there that isn't aware of the data. They're working on data from last year, 2 years ago, making up a price, doing their best guess. But if they present a price 20, 30% lower, they're not making money. And if they're not making money, it means when they get halfway through their project, your project, they're going to have to go start another one. The service is going to drop. The experience is going to be bad. So I get it. You may not be able to hire us at this price, and that's okay. It is what it is. I can show you the data of what how we got here, but oh my gosh, don't buy from the other person that's 20 or 30% lower, because that's going to be a train wreck. And
Right.
just give them the data, fill in that gap with data, the data that you know. And it's okay to be empathetic with them, saying like, the two words that will sell more projects are, "I understand. Wow, this thing is so expensive. I totally understand. I'm uncomfortable presenting this number to you, but the number is the number. Now, let's talk about what's most important. Let me fill in with some more data and see if we can put this together. And by the way, if it's just about the price, don't worry. Call 10 more contractors. You'll find somebody that'll give you the number that you're looking for, but you won't get the project you described. And that's even worse."
Right. A lot of things to unpack there. Luckily or unluckily for us, gas is a very visual price anywhere you go where we can just point at and say, hey, gas has gone up 25% overnight. It's very easy for us to point at that and let them know. At what point do you, if they point at the price and they say, this is crazy, at what point do you get or present yourself as like overly defensive in terms of trying to justify your price? Or is it just a matter of just following them along and saying the first thing you might say is, yeah, I can't believe it. I can't believe gas has gone up as much as it has in the past little bit. And then let that sit with them. And then if they come back with another question, then you kind of follow them down that rabbit hole. I'm just trying to get at like what's the point to which you might sound a little bit overly defensive and trying to defend your number as opposed to being, I don't know, maybe confident with your number or sort of that sense.
Yeah, I don't try to get defensive about the number. And that's why I say, "Hey, I understand and
Right.
I'm uncomfortable presenting this to you, because if we had priced this project 3 months ago, 6 months ago, yeah, it would have been less, but now it is what it is." And you just present it, and silence is a very good tool to use in the sales presentation to say, "I understand it is very expensive. Let me show you some data of why that it is. And I understand if you can't move forward," and just let that linger there. Your customer is going to want to fill in this awkward silence with more information. And usually it's like, "Well, what can we do? Great, great question to ask. I've got some ideas here. But before I start dismantling this project, Why don't you tell me what's most important? Like what you've described is everything that you've wanted, but that comes at a certain price. Let's get down to what are the priorities here? And then because I'm a professional, I can guide you in the right way to make the best decision, meaning customers will want to just pick sometimes the most expensive thing and eliminate it. Or that, what if I could, Mike, what if I could provide my own materials? Again, I say, hey, I understand. Here's the problem with that. That's not an option for us because we get materials at a certain price point. We know the specifications or what you can't just go get this stuff, at the big box stores or whatever. And you don't want the responsibility of getting the materials right. See, when we buy the materials, even though they're very expensive, when we buy their materials, if anything's wrong with them, that's on us. You provide the materials. Not only have you spent money on what you think is a decent product, but the products are different at the retail versus, a wholesale, professional distributor, and the customer doesn't know that. So I understand that that's a priority for you, but we don't operate that way. Let's take a look at something else. Let me give you some options based on what you say your priorities are, and let's see if we can, instead of looking at the whole project, let's define some priorities. Maybe we phase this thing out, or maybe we just eliminate some things that aren't the most important to you, and we can land on a project that you're willing and able to do. See, a lot of times when we have a tendency just to run over the customer with information, and what you want to do is scale back that information a little bit and ask them more questions. Hey, what's important to you? What if we did this option? What if we phased it out in this way? Does that make sense to you? And then just get them to say yes or no. And I get this from, if the contractors out there have never read Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss, it's a great book, and it works for business and sales and negotiation. But I think he says in that book that getting no's are more valuable than anything else, because getting a no is always a decision. Yeses are usually a lie, and maybes are worthless, right? So when you say, hey, here's how much this project is going to be, do you want to, move forward? Because the customer feels awkward and they don't want to admit they can't afford it. See, that's embarrassing. When you push them to say, hey, do you want to do the project? Do you want to do the project? What about this? They're thinking, I can't afford this, but I don't want to admit that. So I'll nod my head and say, yes, great, I'll send you a proposal. And then we all know what happens. They ghost you. They never. So yes is usually a lie. I'm not saying that people are liars, but they get nervous, and so they say a yes. As opposed to maybes. Well, maybe, okay, we know that that's worthless. But when you say, are you willing and able to do this option? Whatever that is. If they say a no, then no is always a decision. Great, we can move forward. And sometimes that no leads to, doesn't look like this is a good fit for us. You said no to all of these things. Call us back if you've made a decision, if anything else changes. But as of now, we're gonna close out your project folder. We're gonna put you on pot. We're gonna put you into this bucket over here. And anytime you're ready, just call us back. And for the business owner, it gives you the ability to go find other clients instead of like waiting and hoping and chasing that person down. So that's what Chris Voss says is, yes is usually a lie, maybes are worthless, but if I can get some no's, those are usually decisions, and I can move forward when my customer makes a decision. And a lot of times that could be, no, we're not going to do the project. Great. Not a problem for us. We'll close out your file and call us back if anything changes.
Definitely. And you did mention earlier that client can just go to, they'll find a cheaper price. If you're a company that's priced at what you should be priced at, they can go somewhere and find a cheaper contractor. It doesn't mean that the value is the same and all that. So stop selling price, start selling value. I've heard you say this before. Can you expand on what this means and how a contractor can actually communicate this value to their client?
Sure. One thing I always caution contractors that have been doing it for a little while, 3 years, 5 years, or whatever. I always ask them, hey, are you charging more now than you did, say, 3 years ago? And I'll do this in a presentation too, and people will raise their hand. I'll say, okay, great. Why are you charging more now? And you get all sorts of reasons. Well, price of labor has gone up, materials have gone up. We didn't have insurance when we started, and now we do, and we didn't realize that. It's like, oh, we have to charge more. And then I always, so they go to the very operational things of why they charge more. And then I always ask them, I'm like, well, are any of you better now than you were 3 years ago? And they're like, oh yeah, we're better. Okay, so your price could go up because you're just better, and you realize that other people aren't as good at the experience and delivering the value and all of that kind of stuff. So if you're charging more now because of all of these factors, that lands on how you price your project. But that price has got a lot of value packed into it because you operate better, you're better. Or you might have figured out that maybe you're in a niche. You've got something very specific to offer that other people don't, and you can charge for that value. So what I've warned contractors is, if you think that getting work and staying in business is by price manipulation, dropping your price to get the job, you might be competing against yourself 3 years ago. Don't compete against who you are, meaning there's somebody else coming into the market that doesn't have insurance, that doesn't know what you know, that doesn't have your experience. And you need to tell your customers when they say, oh, you're 30% higher than the other guy. You're like, yeah, I know that guy. I used to be that guy. And if we stayed that guy, we would have been out of business, but we figured a couple of things out. We priced our work according to our value. And that's where I land on, if price is the most important thing for you, this is probably not a good fit for us. But if you're looking for price, call 10 other people. You will eventually find someone that gives you the number you're looking for, but they can't provide, they won't have insurance, they don't have good employees, they don't have the experience, and they're just not as good as us. And don't be afraid to talk about how good you actually are. Because customers can smell the lack of confidence a mile away. But when you say, this is our price, this is the value that you get. See, the price is what that statement means. Stop selling price, start selling value. Price is always a point of friction, meaning you got to give us some money. And for most customers, especially in construction, that's always creates some friction. Like, ah, I got to give them some money. But you got to focus on, if you'll just do that, look at all the things you get. That's the value part. And that's why anybody buys anything, any product, any service, is not for the price, but for the benefits that somebody gets. I don't want to pay $100,000 for this landscaping project. I don't want to, but I do want to have a nice outdoor space where my family can thrive, where we can have parties so that it looks nice. I want all of the benefits that I get if I just pay that price. So you have to focus more on what the customer's going to get, instead of just saying, hey, here's this number that's standing in the way, and then start chipping away at the number. And then this is where a lot of contractors get into a problem, is they'll chip away at the price, but they'll keep the value up there, and they're never going to make any money because it costs some money to go and provide that level of value. So a lot of times I always tell contractors, like, hey, if we got to go get the job, we need money coming in, I don't ever just drop the price. The first thing is to eliminate scope. Okay, if we eliminate the scope of work, then, but sometimes that doesn't make sense. Like, you can't provide your own materials. We don't allow that because it creates a nightmare. So that's not one of those ways we can reduce the price. But there are other times where it's like, okay, listen, if we're, let's just say it's a, I don't know, $100,000 project, and you think that the customer, or they've expressed like they could pull it off for $90,000, then I might not cut the scope. I might say, okay, here's the deal. I will do this project for $90,000 and basically give you $10,000 worth of value. But here's what I'm going to need from you. When we start the project, I need you and your family, I'm going to come and shoot a video. I'm not going to charge you for it or whatever, but I want you to talk about how excited you are about this project. And then halfway through, when you're sick and tired of us being there and everything's a mess and we're right in the middle of it, I want to take some photos and I want to interview you again to say, as hard as the process is, how much you're enjoying seeing the work go in place. And then at the end of it, we're going to host a party here for all of you and your friends. We're going to invite some designers and whatever, and we're going to film that and photograph that. And you don't have to pay for any of that. So what I'm saying is, I will drop my price by $10,000 if you agree that I can get $20,000 or $30,000 of value of marketing out of it. And I want you to become our best salesperson. I'm going to recommend everybody talk to you. So what I'm saying is, I'm not just dropping my price, I'm negotiating the value. Sure, I want to get the project. You're only going to spend $90,000. Great. We'll do the project for $90,000, but I'm going to get $30,000 of marketing value that I can repeat and repeat and repeat. That is not dropping your price. That's what I would call that $10,000 difference. It's still going to show up in the profit and loss statement, right? But I'm going to leverage that $10,000 into $100,000 of marketing for years to come. And if a homeowner, I'm going to put that into the contract. Okay, we'll do it, and then you're going to do these things for us. Then I'll move forward. But just dropping the price, no way.
I think that's a really unique strategy, especially with the right client, right? Especially if you know they're connected in the local community. They know
Yeah, it
lots of
has to
people.
be the right client.
That party I can see going really, really well if they are very much connected in the community and they know lots of people there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, it right client, right neighborhood, right project.
Yes.
It's a little bit risky or whatever, but that's there. There's reward for where there's risk. And some people have different levels of risk. And in that example, $10,000, it could be $2,000, it could be
Right.
$5,000. But what's more important, what comes across in that conversation, when you're standing toe to toe to a client and they're trying to get you to drop your price, when you come up with a plan and say, yeah, okay, no problem, how about we do this? Like I said, they're going to be overwhelmed by the confidence that you present and be like, oh, well, we can't get one over on this guy, and we want the project. And it's like what you're asking them to do is, we would like to celebrate your project with you. Will you participate in that with us and help us out? And I think a lot of, again, right clients will be like, okay, sure, no problem.
We want to take a break from today's episode to thank our sponsor, Cycle CPA. Are you basing your business decisions solely on a gut feeling? If so, you may be leaving potential profits on the table. It's crucial to base these important decisions on your financials, whether you're planning to hire a new employee, add another crew, purchase equipment or vehicles, or take on more debt to support a new service line. At Cycle CPA, they not only handle bookkeeping and taxes, but they also provide guidance in advisory services tailored to the landscape and hardscape industry. Their team of specialized accountants ensures that when it comes to making the next key decision in your company, you'll have a financial partner in your corner. So visit them at cyclecpa.com, and for $200 off, mention the How to Hardscape podcast. Now back to our episode. How do you or how have you seen value communicated in a unique way by contractors? One thing that I've started to do personally is, since I film everything, I've got tutorial videos and everything from starting a project to finishing a project and every aspect of that project, from installing pavers, installing retaining walls. And then I link those videos into my proposal, so they know exactly what they're going to get. They know exactly how I'm going to install that. The amount of feedback that I get from those videos from clients, whether they sign up with me or not, a lot of them that do sign up with me, and I ask them, a lot of them say, I just like how transparent you were with exactly how you're going to install my project. Other contractors that we got quotes for didn't even list out anything, let alone put a video in there. So I'm just wondering, and I'm trying to think about more ways that I can communicate that value in my sales process, I guess. And I guess one thing that I'm not doing is appealing more so to the emotion of my clients as well. That's one thing that I want to get into more. But Sean, what have you seen unique ways that contractors have been able to communicate what their value is and what differentiates themselves in the market from other contractors?
Yeah, I think what you described there is a perfect example of how you provide value to a customer, even before they are a customer. And I tell this to a lot of my clients is to say, what's the most valuable thing that you can give away for free? And where that comes in, what that comes into is show your client through video, through on social media, through documentation, videos, whatever it is, provide for free for them, show them how they could do it themselves, walk them through step by step. And again, this varies by business to business, but in general, the idea here is people say, well, if you teach them that or you show them that, then they'll just go do it. And that is a fixed mindset. What you want to do with that, by showing that value and showing the step by step and teaching them how to do it themselves. The best clients, the ones that pay the fastest and will pay the most and will not be a headache during the project, are the ones that see and understand all of what you're showing them is just how difficult this thing is. And if you want to do it, here's this step by step, so that people go, oh my gosh, I just thought you brought in some stone and you compacted it and you put the pavers down, and I didn't realize there were 14 other steps just to get the stone base in correctly. I don't want to do all of that. I'm so glad that person taught me that. I could go do it if I followed their 15 point video series, which you've produced, but it's just easier for them. Or like I said before, there's less friction if they say, oh, this person obviously has all their bases covered. They're willing to show me how to do it. You know what? It's just easier if I hire them. So what you were saying about transparency is like, yeah, teach your customers how they could do what you do, and your worst ones will go off and try to do it themselves because that's the value to them. Maybe they go and do that. They realize how hard it is, and you may never know this, but when their friends talk to them and say, hey, we see your project and we saw that it took you 6 months to do it, and you're like, yeah, I started following this guy on YouTube, Mike, and he was showing me all of this stuff, but man, you should just call him. Don't do what I did. It's way harder than he makes it look. Or I'm just, I realize the value, the value in that. So anyway, that's why I say that's where the value comes from, is take the most valuable thing that you've got, give it away for free, and it will come back to you and it helps produce really good customers, because they, in their minds, they're like, oh, I didn't realize it was that complicated. We better hire a professional to do it. We should just call this guy because he seems to know what he's doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree with that. It has worked so far for my business, and it continues to produce leads, as well as YouTube ads is a good way to also generate, zero cost marketing. And yeah, it pays for itself.
So if anybody's thinking about like, oh, I like that idea, but how do I start doing that? Before you flip the camera on, this is a framework that we teach our clients. When you want to produce value, you want to start showing value to your clients. Here's a framework that if you follow this, it's very simple and you can apply it to all sorts of aspects of your business. But what we say is there are three questions that your customers are always asking themselves, even though they may not verbalize it. So when it comes to whether it's the content that you're putting out there, or it's the way that you're walking them through the sales process, or even when you're in a project, it's the way you deliver your project. It's very simple. It's these three questions. It is, where am I at? This is what the customer's always asking. So where am I at? How does this work? And what's next? So if you can put a piece of content or part of your standard operating procedures, if you start with that simple framework saying like, where are we in this? Our customer needs to know where they're at. They're talking about a project that's going to start this summer, but they haven't made all the decisions yet. In order to do the project, we got to do some planning. We got to do mobilization. They've got to make some selections. We got to do pricing. We got to meet with subcontractors, all that kind of stuff. So, hey, step one is what we call our development phase, or whatever you call that. That's where you're at. We're right here. The thing you're talking about, the construction happens over here. You're not there yet. We'll get there, but you're right here in what we call our pre-construction, our planning, our development phase. Let me tell you how the development phase works. We're going to make some selections. You're going to be presented with some sketches. There'll be some back and forth. So that's how this works. When we complete that, then we go to the next step, which is mobilization. Don't worry about that or the contract or whatever. And then when you get to the contract, you say, hey, congratulations. We've made it through development or planning. Now we're at the contract stage. That's where you're at. Let me explain how our contract works. This is where a lot of contractors could film a video, just screen record, bring up your standard contract or your work order or whatever. It doesn't have to be really complicated. And then just record yourself talking to the customer. Hey, here's our standard contract. Here's some main bullet points that you need to pay attention to. Again, this is general in nature. It may not be their specific contract. But you're saying like, here's where you're at, the contract phase. Here's how the contract works. And when you sign this and pay a deposit or whatever that requirement is, let me tell you what's going to come next. We're going to start mobilizing to the site. So when you get through the contract phase and do these things, then here's what's next. And then they sign the contract. And you can shoot a video that's general in nature that says, congratulations, Mr. or Mrs. Client. You just signed the contract and paid the deposit. You are now in what we call mobilization phase. It's going to take about 2 weeks, but here's where you're at. Let me tell you how it's going to work. The porta-john's going to show up. The dumpster's going to show up. We're going to remove the fence. It's going to start to get a little messy because we got to get access to the backyard or the front yard or whatever it is. But once we get all that stuff set up, then we'll start construction or production. But right now we're in mobilization. Here's how it works, and here's what's next. And you just repeat that framework and answering those questions, and you create videos, you create documents, or that's just the conversation. Your customers are always going to want to jump ahead, maybe several steps down the road. And if you let them, they're going to get lost. And that's what we always say is we want to put them, what we call this is the monorail maps. We want to put your customers on a monorail. And the reason that we call it monorail is if you've ever been on a monorail or a subway, it's impossible to get lost on a monorail. Now, you may not get off at the right step, but that's why if you've ever been on a subway or like an airport tram, same sort of thing. When you step on there, they say, hey, you're at gate A22. The next stop is the B gates. And that, you know, here's the airlines that are at that, you know, terminal. And then when you get there, they'll say, move towards the door. The doors are open. So it's like, here's where you're at. Here's how this works. And here's what's next. And it's very, very powerful and simple because most people can remember that and just communicate that to your clients and put it on repeat.
I love that. I've got so many ideas from that. That's whizzing through my head. I love it. That's something that I need to work on is getting some sort of visual component towards where they are in the process. Because there's just so many from pre-qualifying the client to meeting with that initial consultation to signing that contract to actually mobilization. And that initial contact, it's helpful for them to see kind of where this goes from there, as opposed to, because I ask a lot of questions in my first email, and I just sometimes they get confused as to just come out and visit us. And no, we ask these questions, and then this is where you are in the process. Here's where you're going if you answer these questions. I think that's a great way.
I'm always looking to give the customer, potential customer, a status. And it's okay to say, hey, you're at the very beginning. This is where everybody starts. And what I'm saying by giving them status, saying this may not be a good fit for you because we talked to 10 people and only two of them make it to the next stage. And that's okay. That's why we want, are you two of the 10? That's where we go back to the data. I want to tell people like, yeah, we get a lot of calls. We hear a lot of no's and that's okay. We know that only two or three people make it to the next stage. And of those three people that make it to the next stage, they're always talking about a number, but one or two of them, when they go to contract, the number we're talking about has a tendency to grow by 17.5%. I'm going to give them some stats to say, it's okay. You're in this big bucket that a lot of people don't make it out of for whatever reason. And that's okay. But if you do make it, you're kind of special. So that's the status. Like you're the top 20%. And then of those 20%, half of them, the project grows. We already know this because we're tracking this data. So we're going to let you know if you make it out of this bucket and you come into this bucket, congratulations, you're the cream of the crop. Now, the next thing is, are you the type of person whose project, even though you say, I'm not going to spend a dollar more? Well, we know that most of our clients do spend more money once they see, once we talk about their priorities. So I can paint that picture to say, if this is the initial call, it's most likely you're not going to make it to step three unless you can make these decisions or you're prepared to do that. And I'm just letting you know this right now. And people will want to say, no, 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 I want to be a good client. I want that status. And the ones that don't and they argue with you, well, they just filter themselves out. And that's why the process is important. And again, people will want to make a call and say, when can you get started? Oh, man, getting started is like, there's a couple of steps here. Let's go back to where you're at now. Let me tell you about how it works. And then we'll talk about what's next.
Excellent. We're already kind of talking about it, but systems and sure. The contractor, where if a contractor is just hearing about systems and what they are and whatever, where do a contractors even start in creating a system? Is there any low hanging fruit that we can implement to minimal effort, get up and create a system that's going to help them out incredibly, whether they know or they have a system or not for it?
Sure. The high level approach to any system, here's the mistake that a lot of business owners, let's say business owners in general, make is they say, oh, we need a system for this and we don't have any systems. So let me create this system. And so they'll just start with step one. Hey, here's step one of this. And it doesn't matter what it could be, something as simple as we need a system for filling out our time cards or reporting our time. So here's step one. And usually the business owner, that step one, when they write it down, they write down step two and step three, and they'll walk out of their office, or as I would say, they go into a vacuum, they create this document, they create this system. Then they go in and try to implement it in the field, or they give it to the employees. And the biggest mistake is that step one, if an employee looks down and says, that's not my step one, I do something different, they will ignore everything else, right? So I say, when it comes to building a system, always start with the outcome. What is the outcome we want to achieve? So for example, like something as simple as time reporting or filling out the time card. Yeah, step one, log into the time app or whatever, right? But if someone has problems, you know, with technology, maybe they're filling it out on paper. That may not be their step one, but the outcome of the time reporting system is, let's say, for example, the outcome is 100% accuracy of time reporting on a weekly basis due by 5 o'clock on Fridays. That is the goal. That is the outcome that we're looking to achieve. Now, the steps in order to get there, I'm okay if people take different approaches as long as the outcome is met, because you could say, hey, fill out your time card, do it this way, do step one, step two, step three. Somebody might have a better way. They might have a wrong way of doing it, but they might have a better way. And I want to make sure that my people can improve this system as long as the outcome is being met. Hey, Sean, you know what? You'll have some really creative people that say, I don't actually fill out the time card on a daily basis. What's easier for me is I keep a journal of everything. And then at the end of the week, I can snap a picture. I don't know, whatever it is. Great. Are you meeting the outcome? Great. Let's bring some people together that are achieving the outcome. Let's talk about their steps. And then we can actually create the system, because everybody's getting to the same end goal. But now we can come together as a team and the team can decide what's step one and what's step two. And then we can make a policy out of it. And once we make a policy out of it, then we got a pretty good idea. Like, this is how we do stuff here. And then that next person that comes into the organization, the owner doesn't have to train on systems. Everybody else does, because they're all on the same page. This is how we do stuff here. But I always tell somebody when they come in, this is what we do here. Follow the system. Oh, and by the way, when it comes to this system or any system in this business, if you find a better way to do it, to achieve the outcome, let us know. We're open to that. And that way it pushes the training and the system implementation down from the owner into the team that is really doing it every day. And that's what I say about systems. The owner is trying to create systems all the time, and it takes time to do that. Most of the time it's wrong because it doesn't match what's going on out in the field. But stuff is getting done in your business every day by the people that you employ. I always say, here's the outcome of what we're trying to achieve. How do you do it? How do you do it? And how do you do it? And then bring them together to say, like, okay, there's a lot of different ways to get here. What's the best way? And have the team agree on this is how we're going to do this. And then it's their responsibility to make sure that's carried out day to day.
I like that. I like having the feedback and the input from the team because now it puts ownership on them to now carry out what they've created, essentially.
Yeah, and it puts some responsibility on them when someone else comes in, they're trying to break the system. If because everybody's participated in the creation of that system, and again, this takes some time, but when someone tries to break the system, you got three or four guys standing around going, whoa, hey, that's not what we do here.
I like
Let's
it.
do it like this. And the training happens at the ground level by the
Definitely.
guys and gals that are doing the stuff every day.
Definitely. Sean, we've got a little bit of time left here, so I'm going to leave this up to you. Do you want to talk about KPIs or do you want to talk about time management strategies?
Oh man, that's yeah, I don't know. I'm gonna let you pick.
Okay, so time is big on my mind because I am having less and less of it these days with how much I've got on my plate. So time management strategies, maybe just one or something that you that has really helped you or you've seen a contractor implement time management strategy that you think could help a contractor out.
Sure. And this is the most painful for a lot of contractors, especially when they're starting out or if they have a small team. But the sooner you can, it's a discipline and it becomes a habit. But if you practice it, it will pay for itself tenfold. And what that is blocking off time on your calendar, not making yourself available during the week. It's so easy to say, like, oh, I'm going to do the paperwork, I'm going to do the estimating evenings, weekends, and all of that kind of stuff. And so our calendars just have a tendency to fill up with a bunch of unimportant stuff. So I always challenge business owners to pick a day and start with maybe a 2 hour block of time. For example, to say, okay, I'm going to work on the business with estimating, paperwork, bookkeeping, I don't know, whatever that is. And I'm going to put it on my calendar. And let's just say it's Friday afternoon from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. That time is no longer available. It doesn't exist on my calendar for other things. And when you block out that time, then you just know, hey, next week I'm not going to schedule something late Friday afternoon because that's my block of time to be in the office. And what it forces you to do is to say, oh, like let's say you got a couple of guys that work for you. And you've got this block of time on Friday afternoon. At 3 o'clock, you're not available. I'm not, unless I always tell people, unless somebody's bleeding or something's on fire, don't call me. I'm not available. And again, part of this system, what's the outcome? What's the why behind it? This is the time that I catch up or I work on stuff for the next week. This is why this is important. So if I'm not available at 3 p.m., I'm going to tell this to my guys. If I'm not available at 3 p.m. on Fridays, and you need some information from me about whatever the rest of the day on Friday, what must you do? Oh, I've got to ask my questions before 3 o'clock on Friday. So it automatically starts to block out their time. And then if you can block out 2 hours, that's what I always tell people is block out 2 hours and practice it for about 5 or 6 weeks, just one block of time, and get into the habit of doing that. You're going to screw it up. And as the Mike Tyson quote says, everybody has a plan till you get punched in the mouth, right? Something's going to punch you in the mouth next week, and you're going to run out in the field, and that time you're not going to do whatever you're going to do during that block of time. All right, but next week I'm defaulting back to that. And after about 5 or 6 weeks, if you can capture 2 hours where you're maybe it's scheduling, maybe it's estimating, maybe it's bookkeeping, maybe it's I don't know, something related to whatever you want to work on in the business, that's fine. But if you can do that for 2 hours, then you can grow it to four. And when you get to 4 hours, you can grow it to a day. And then you can start applying other blocks of time to what is the most important thing on Monday? And maybe that's just an hour, maybe that's in the morning. So you start to develop these blocks of time throughout the week. You got to communicate that to your team, let them know what your block of time is. And when you've got two or three blocks of time where you're doing things that grow the business, it automatically makes them have to prioritize their time because you're not, if you had a block of time on Mondays, one on Wednesdays, and one on Fridays, what you're doing, you're not available. It forces them to say, okay, Mike's not available Monday from 8 to 9. So by the end of the day, Friday, we better get whatever information, or you got to communicate what they need to be doing Mondays from 8 to 9 before you come back online.
Got
And
it.
so time blocking, there's a ton of research that shows that it works, and there's lots of books written on it, but that's one of the most important things is blocking out your time and prioritizing those. And just start with, it's kind of like with profit first. We say, hey, just before you get deep into the financials, just start with 1%. Make it so small, it's impossible not to do. Same thing with time management. Start with one block of time. You're going to screw it up over the next few weeks, but eventually, 5 or 6 weeks, it starts to become a habit. And when customers call you and say, back to the confidence thing, hey, Mike, can you run out here Friday afternoon? Be like, no, I'm sorry, I'm not available. What else you got? What else would be convenient for you? They'll be like, oh, this guy is, he knows what he's doing. Like, I can't just call him up and he'll just run out. It's part of that confidence.
Absolutely. And if you're listening to this and you haven't listened to our first episode, that was Profit First for Contractors, essentially, in that episode with Sean Van Dyke, an interview there. But I would especially recommend you, if you haven't already, read Profit First for Contractors by Sean Van Dyke. Get that. I've got the audiobook version and I love it. And I listen to it probably each year. And but also get the physical copy, whatever works for you. Sean, where can our audience go find out more about you, everything else that you've got going on besides Profit First for Contractors there, and anything you want to leave them with.
You can check us out at seanvandyke.com. That's where I've got, a lot of systems, blog articles, and all that at my website. That's SHAWNVANDYKE, seanvandyke.com. Hit me up on Instagram. I hang out there a lot and I do answer all my own DMs. We got a YouTube channel. So I just tell people, Google Sean Van Dyke and you'll find all sorts of podcasts, websites, social media stuff. So just hit us up there.
Beautiful. Sean, thank you for your time once again here. I appreciate it.
Mike, thanks for having me. Look forward to doing it again.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast episode. If you want to learn more about Sean Van Dyke, I highly suggest you follow him on Instagram at Sean Van Dyke to get started there. And I highly recommend that you also read Profit First for Contractors. And if you're looking for bookkeeping, accounting, CFO services, reach out to Cycle CPA at cyclecpa.com. Let them know how to skip sent you for money off their services there. And if you're looking for a software to get into this season, check out the How to Hardscape headquarters at members.howtohardscape.com or send me a message at How to Hardscape on Instagram. We'll set up a demo call and see if it works for you and your business. And thank you for listening to today's podcast episode. We'll see you next week on the How to Hardscape podcast.